I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition. One of my wife's forms of expression is through food. My brother-in-law, painting. My son, he's a total geek when it comes to cars. My next guest found her expression and talent through seeing the funny side of life. Maureen Langan was a broadcast journalist for Bloomberg TV, PBS, and KGO Radio. She's now a stand-up comic, and a darn good one. We talked about a lot of things, in particular, how humor can heal, how political correctness can actually separate people, not join them, how to engage people in humor when they could be offended, how relationships create the safety for humor and healing, that being outspoken means accepting that you'll win some friends and you'll gain some enemies, and that having the courage to say what you're thinking is important. Maureen's heart is in the right place. She wants us all just to lighten up, have some fun, see the humor, and care for one another. Maureen Langan. Maureen, thanks a lot for being on the Business of Intuition. And I just wanted to start off with a couple of questions, knowing that you have a great career, a past career in broadcasting, and that you have done a lot of work with corporations, and you're also very, very funny, and you've got this wonderful business around comedy and bringing light to people's lives. In this art form, you're not a sculptor, you're not a painter, you're not an architect, your medium is humor. And I think there's something to be said for we learn a lot about the person through their art. So what is it that you want people to know about you? And what do you want to change in other people that you hope will come from your work?
Well, you know, I think that humor or wit is within you. Like, some people need to express themselves through painting, or they visualize the world through sculpture. For me, I see words. Like, I'll be running and things, I see words. And then I see, I flip things. I don't know. It just comes to my mind. You talk about intuition. It's just an internal thing. I don't know if it's from my Irish background, because they tend to be literary and witty people. I don't know. My father has it. It's just like right there. But I think what's a shame right now in our overly politically correct world is that some people express darkness through humor. So you may make a joke about, you know, this is a word people don't like, but a miscarriage, which I do because it flips the pain. And you may make a joke about, I had a friend who passed from cancer two nights ago. It's horrific. He's a young man. It's so painful. And I'm talking with another comic because the three of us work together so much. And we're crying and yet making jokes. But we know he's looking down going, all right, guys, got it. Because amongst comics. So I think if people feel free enough to just not be so scared of a part of them that may feel dark and know that, you know, it's okay to express it through sculpture, but why can't we express it through humor and words? And right now we're in a world where the humor isn't, okay, this is how I express myself. It's like, well, I'm offended by that. I don't like that. So people can learn a lot if they just calm the frig down, like just relax, welcome it or don't welcome it. But it's another person's voice. And if you open your soul, then we can meet at a deeper level. And it's so cathartic to laugh. It's so cathartic.
I think you're right on. And I wanted to ask you, so this is such an important topic. I didn't even know you would get into this, but you're absolutely right. There's been such an oversensitivity towards language and making sure that we don't offend anybody. So we've lost a lot of the opportunity for connection and humor. How do you get people to engage in humor when the topic might be taboo? Like, I could be offended.
I know. I know. This is the quandary in these recent days. Like there is a reluctance sometimes to share one's truth or flipping it because of that. I've had people stand up and scream, F you, and walk out.
In a stand-up setting or just in a conversation?
No. Oh, well, that too. But in a setting, an event in Cape Cod. Huh. And people just project. But you know what happens? This is the truth. The more famous you are, so if you're somebody like a Lewis Black, a George Carlin, a Kathy Griffin, who was very controversial, but her core audience was loyal because she had that core audience because she was famous enough that those who got her are going to come to her shows. I'm not famous enough, though I have a following in my world at my level, but I'll have people at events who don't know me. So they're going to get offended. Whereas when you're famous enough, people know you. They're like, let's get on board. I love where she's coming from. So you see, that's the clarity.
So it's the relationship that allows us to have the humor where if I didn't have the relationship with you, I might take offense to your words because I don't know you. You're the other person.
That's a really good way of putting it. I don't have a relationship with those people. That is perfect. I like that. That's right. Huh. That's right. No, that's what I'm going to use. That's a good way of summing up.
To demystify this, then it sounds like if I were to repeat back what you just said, that we would need to create a relationship with somebody before the humor becomes safe enough for us to be able to get engaged in. But what I also find interesting is that the humor is part of what creates the relationship in the first place.
There you go. That's what I was just about to say. You have to put it out there in order for you to go, oh my God, I love her. Let me come follow her. So it's a double-edged sword. So sometimes you have to be brave enough just to say what you want to say, let the chips fall where they may, let those who want to go F you and walk out, walk out. Those who want to stay, stay. But I'm also so sensitive that it troubles me that somebody interpreted that way. But
so your point about somebody saying F you, they walk out, they don't like your humor, or they take offense to it, or they think that it means one thing and that's not what it really meant.
Right.
Are you okay with that? Is that sort of your... a framework, like I'm going to win some friends and I'm going to win some enemies, and that's all right. That's my world, and I've come to accept that.
Yes, but it's still, yes, because you have no other choice. Because if you want to be everything to everyone, you will be what we call a hack. You're juggling. How high? Where shall I run? I love you. You love me. I don't want to be that. You want to be authentic. So. Yes, I let the chips fall where they may. What other choice do you have? But it still troubles me that they don't know where my heart's coming from.
There's just, I think there's so much to this because I know in my own personality, I have a people-pleasing interest, and I will engage in conflict, but it's not the thing that I wake up and go, yay, let's get involved with conflict, right? So with this whole situation regarding humor and politics, and you throw in, you got your business and all the clients and so forth. I tiptoe around and I sort of navigate through all of these different conversations, not inspiring debate, not even inspiring conversation, because I'm just staying away from it. And I think a lot of people have just decided to stay away from it because it doesn't feel safe. What I am impressed with you, and maybe it's part of your business, it's part of your work, is you're calling that out. You have the courage to say the things that maybe you were thinking, and you're okay with the fact that some people just may not accept it. I think that's a lesson for all of us.
But I have stayed away from a lot of politics because it's been so polarizing, and my goal is to bring people together. However, I was supposed to go to Edinburgh to the Fringe Festival in Scotland in August. And I was so looking forward to that because it's such an intelligent audience and you can make fun of things and they're not overly sensitive. The woman who said F you and walked out with it, she then made her friends, and her friends were like, well, we're having fun. She's like, no, we're leaving. I had made a Trump joke. And, again, you could always make fun of politicians until this time. So I just simply said, do you want to know what I said? It's not, horrible, but maybe you could cut this out if you don't like
it. No, go for it. We're not going to edit it. Yeah, go for it.
I just said, I just want to know how much weight I have to gain to go to a Trump rally. And it's just a question. I just want to know. That's all. I'm just asking. So you see how I diffuse it? I'm just asking. And I'm like, all right. And then she had a shirt that said, he can grab me, and an arrow pointing. That's what she's wearing. And I said, well, honey, he doesn't want to grab you. Trust me. He's grabbing on a higher level.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just like I did a one person show called Daughter of a Garbage Man. And it's about growing up the daughter of a garbage man and from the South Bronx and an Irish immigrant mother. It's funny, but it's very deep. And it goes into a lot of deep stuff that's painful, but you know, it's not therapy. I'm sharing with people the truth of life and growing up with violence, but yet humor. And there's this a line where I show a picture of my dad, he's still alive, thank God, very handsome man, very handsome growing up and as a young man. And I said, there's my dad. He's a blend of Archie Bunker, because he's from the South Bronx. He says crazy things that Archie Bunker would say. Fred Sanford, who was Sanford and Son, who had that streetwise, and the college-educated son, he knew more than the college-educated son. Dummy, let me tell you something. So my father had street sense, who's very wise. And I said, and like Marlon Brando, the early years, not the fat years. Okay. After the show, this is a really vulnerable. I got very sick when I was a teenager. I talk about that. Very vulnerable. And afterwards, this woman around my age and around 50, and she comes up to me. You're so vulnerable. You just put your heart and soul on the floor. And she says to me, I need to talk with you. I don't like that you use the word fat. I had eating issues and my therapist said I should confront things that trigger me. And I go, and you picked me?
Good for you.
On your own, and now it's my fault. So the fact that my father hit me had nothing. That didn't resonate for you. It's the fact that you said, all right, okay. I said, okay. She said, well, I don't think you're hearing me. I go, I'm hearing you, but I'm not interested. Like, well, this is the world we live in where I have to make her okay. She's not responsible for herself. And this is the problem, because we're living right now where how you interpret it is more valuable than how my heart means it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. That's
I don't want to hate people. They make me.
To your t-shirt that is over your left shoulder for those of you who do not see this.
It says, don't make me hate you.
I know. Don't make me hate you. Yeah. You know, I think that this.
Get one.
And we will definitely pull that into the conversation as we finish up here. But I want to talk about that trust piece around you being able to be so exposed and that vulnerability, because I've seen you a few times at conferences and I am just, again, impressed by how open you are, and yet you can move back and forth between almost tragedy and comedy, just so adeptly. And we get to know you so quickly. And I have this nightmare. I used to be an actor years and years and years ago, and I still have this nightmare. I had this 2 days ago, where I'm on stage, curtains open, I'm the lead, and I don't know my lines. This classic actor nightmare, right? And I know it's a trust issue. I know it's like I somehow I'm dealing with something that has to do with I don't trust myself or the situation and so on and so forth. But what do you do to sort of build that trust in yourself to follow that spark, that intuition, that, you know, where's the courage come from? I guess that's what I'm trying to get my arms around with you.
Well, you do it with the fear. You don't wait till the fear goes away. You do it with fear. And then familiarity breeds security. So if you're so frightened, but you do it, and believe me, I wanted to puke. I thought I was going to have the worst upset stomach probably for a year. I still get nervous before I do gigs. I want to be connected. I want to make sure that the material I'm sharing is appropriate. I want to keep people engaged. I did the events that you've been at. And you know, I just want to feel the people in there. And you can feel energy. You walk into a room, you can feel if you're. So you do it despite the fear. And then the more you've approached the fear, you go, okay, my little nervous friend's on my shoulder. We're going to deal with this. And also, this is such an old cliche, but one of my early comedy coaches said, you go out there with the body confident. So at least you're showing that. And that people want you to do well. They want you to do well. They don't want you to be nervous up there. So if you go up with your shoulders up and your body confident, I don't mean cocky, but more like, I got this. I open my arms wide. And that gives you confidence. Look, I'm going like a crazy person. But that in your mind gives you confidence and it grows. And then you have a little fear, but it's not overtaking you.
So what else did your comedy coach tell you? That's a great one in terms of your body sort of informing you to be confident, even though you might not be. They say that, you know, public speaking is one of the biggest fears that people have universally. And, you know, standing in front of a group is terrifying for those. What else do you do to kind of get yourself into the place of being present, being able to deliver your information, have that relationship with your audience, and put those fears at bay? What's your process for getting ready?
Oh, well, you know, I know a lot of comics who say, well, I want to wing it. I never wing it. The journalist in me and the former broadcaster is very prepared. So if you're prepared, you have foundation. And then you can go in and out. Then you can wing it in between because you have a safe place to come, a prepared place to come back to. Mm. And my early comedy coach, you'll see comics play with the audience, right?
Yeah.
He said, don't you go out in that crowd unless you know how to come back in. You cannot let the audience member control your performance. So if you're not confident enough to know how to bring that back, reel that back in, don't do it. And what that means is if I have, a heckler, we have all had that. It's usually a white guy who wants a lot of attention and doesn't like that a woman's up there. Mm. Invariably, I'm telling you, almost 99% of the time. So when somebody does that at first, I go, okay, all right, Drew, good. He wanted to be part of the show. Let's give a round to Drew. Very positive. The next time I go, okay, little Tourette syndrome. That's okay, Drew. And then the next time I go, okay, okay, Drew, you're dead to me now. You're dead to me. No more Drew. Okay. Anybody? Do we still know? Okay. And then I get a little, mean, yeah. Like, shut up.
Right.
And also you don't talk if somebody, so I know how to handle that, but that came with, time.
Yeah.
And the other thing is if there's somebody in the front row and they're rolling their eyes or they're not into it or they're saying under their breath things, you hear everything. You don't miss anything. Mm-hmm. Don't let that person control you. Go speak to the whole audience because they're not hearing that person in the front row being rude.
Right.
They're not hearing, but they're seeing you getting off balance and they see you not connecting with them.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, it was. That's Tim Davis taught me all that.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I was thinking that in terms of like facilitating meetings with people or groups or teams, is that I've seen this with facilitators that they ask a question of the group and they're not necessarily prepared for the answer. And so all of a sudden they've lost the audience and now they got to bring them back. And I think your point's well taken is don't ask a question that you're not ready to receive the answer for.
That's exactly. And that's what the work is in corporate America, though I can't say Tourette's syndrome.
Right.
But that's the thing, too. You have to know the line between corporate America and comedy stage. And because I worked for Bloomberg and public television, you have to know how to work very clean and very smart. Comedy, very smart, but you can get edgy. You can, jump off a cliff with them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've mentioned in your talk that we were sort of in this Kardashian world where, we're fame for fame's sake and that it's all about the number of likes we have and the number of friends on Facebook. And we're sort of losing some of this sense of authenticity. And I think authenticity is so compelling when it's in front of us because we're so used to the fluff. It's become the thing that we are seeing all the time. But when somebody is showing up and being authentic, it's almost like, wow, okay, hold the phone. I'm going to pay attention to this. What sort of advice do you have for people who might be in business, who are not in business? Doesn't really matter. But what is your advice to be able to find what's authentic and express it? Do you have any sort of ideas around that?
Well, yeah, I do. And this is part of the corporate talks that I'm talking about. Okay, what happens is it gets battered out of us. You go work into a business or a company and they have their corporate culture. So what does that mean? We usually all act the same. We dress the same. I understand the same goals. I understand a corporate goal and our culture is to treat the customers this way and get to this point. But why can't different people in that company travel different roads to that destination? So I'll give you an example. When I worked at Bloomberg Television and Radio, when I was a broadcaster, there was an old timer and he was very famous for many years in New York, broadcasting the Giants games and the football games. So he gets hired. He's in his twilight years, big heavy smoker, the sunken cheeks, you know, the gruff attitude. He's banging away at his typewriter, his sports reports, which then he records. Mm. The corporate culture wanted him not to work on the typewriter anymore. And they forced this man in his 60s, who's never used a computer, renowned, well-respected in his field, to learn a computer. Hmm. Why? Was the end result that he was putting out there on air different? Yeah, it kind of was, because you put him through such torture to get there. Hmm. And how great would it be if somebody walked in the door and saw this relic of a man and a relic of a typewriter? He becomes a conversation piece. He becomes an energy of a person's uniqueness. So what we do is we cut that off because it doesn't fit our corporate culture. What the hell are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Why don't we honor that man's experience and respect what he's bringing forth? And how cool would that be? Seeing him banging away at an old, you know, Selectric IBM, right? Mm-hmm. Who's he hurting? But you're hurting him by not letting him have his individuality.
So to me, that almost seems like almost a bureaucratic effort at control and compliance and being able to predict workflow, you know, to say, we're all going to do it this way. And right. Therefore, we have control over the outcome, and we're trying to meet a certain bottom line. And we have Wall Street barking at us, and we have shareholders right. over here. So let's create right. a straight and narrow point. We're all going to, like, you know, jump in and do it the same way. I think it's what you're saying is that's what seems to happen. But in the other big word, I think, right now for people is innovation and the need to continue to create learning organizations. But how do you do that if you've got this corporate culture compliance mantra that you're just describing?
My hope is that you start getting people leading companies or running companies who see the value in that rebel, which, you know, rebel sounds like a bad word, but he's not in line with the corporate culture. The troublemaker, maybe they have ideas. They're questioning things in those meetings. They're not just nodding. They're not afraid until you knock them down enough. They're mm-hmm. quirky, the wacky. You have to get people running companies or in positions of power to say, I like that uniqueness. Let's hear. Nobody learns anything when everybody's doing it the exact same way and don't feel like they can bring their uniqueness. So that's what I mean by the rebel. You know, when I worked at Bloomberg, I'll just do you want to hear a story or no?
Of course I do.
When I was hired by Bloomberg Television and Radio, Mike Bloomberg had just started the radio station in New York City. And I was freelancing at the Nightly Business Report, whatever, and not my forte. But I had to call him, who I did not know him. Nobody did. He just bought the radio station. He wasn't how we know him now. And I said, the Nightly Business Report, I'm Maureen Lang, and they'd like to set up an interview with you here. Would you be available? He said, look, normally I do it, but, you know, I just bought a radio station, so I have to pass for now. I said, no, do you need any reporters? He goes, yeah, come on down. I'll have you meet my news director. And then he hired me, more money than I'd ever made. I was like, oh my God, I'm the daughter of a garbage man, you know, first to go to college. I was so happy. So we're all doing mock newscasts before we go on the air. And he said, he had the foresight. He said, I sat next to him for 5 of my 7 years at Bloomberg. So I got to know him very well. And he said, my God, you people all do this newscast the same. There could be a goat in the road. You do it with the same importance. Langan's the only one with a sense of humor here. So he said to me, do you want to create your own beat? He asked me if I wanted to create my own beat, which was commentary, satirical world news, and man on the street. I created that. Huh. Won awards for the company. I'm telling you this humbly, as best female commentator in New York. Mm. Planned Parenthood National Award for commentary I did. So Fabio would come in. I would have silly, I'd have smart, it'd run the gamut. So Fabio, you know Fabio, the romance novel guy?
Yeah.
So he would always come in. He was a regular, and he'd bring like the love cards of Valentine. And I go, this is BS. You were on Kathy Lee Gifford's show this morning. You give everybody the card. I've had it with you, Fabio. On air, you know, just fun. So one day he picks me up, this hulking guy, thank God he was running marathons then. And he picks me up like, you know, a sailor would pick up a woman across his arms. Somebody flashes a photo. Mike Bloomberg has that blown up into a full wall size poster and gifts it to me. So this is the innovation of a man who says she's unique, she's quirky, she's funny, and lets me go to town. When he starts running for mayor, we get a corporate suit. Now the court, and he takes me into a conference room and he says, we'd like you to take down the poster of Fabio in my cubicle. I said, you want me to kill Fabio? And he goes, well, it's not in keeping with our corporate culture.
Oh, gosh.
And then he said, you know, your stuff is a bit controversial. So we'd like to go in a different direction. And we would like you to report on retirement on funds for retired people. I didn't understand what he was saying. So I said, may I speak freely? And he said, of course. I go, I would rather stick pins in my eyes. So I had to go. I had to move on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But do you see the difference?
Absolutely.
That's a story, you know?
But there's so much work these days and so much words these days around people creating their own brand. You know, leadership brands is sort of a buzzword that I'm hearing a lot of. And yet a leadership brand is not necessarily just the reflection of your company. It's that uniqueness. Maybe it's that rebel in you that has its own unique perspective that we don't necessarily encourage. But in one hand, we want the brand, but we want it to be safe, you know? And I think that there's a give and take on this. You know, we need to be able to communicate with people and engage them, but we at the same time, we got to be who ourselves. And right now in the way that things are in this world, I think your message is very, very timely because we got to get back to that humor, got to get back to that authenticity, that vulnerability, and that rebel that you're just talking about.
And that comes with diversity of people and thought. People and thought, you know, I don't know if you see life. You were saying to me, how do I find humor? It's just my brain flips it. So that's different than somebody who's a numbers person. So if you're a role in a company, you can have different people. And when I say diversity of thought and people, I think about, and this was the TED Talk, the business of making fun, these people that we cut out of our worlds because they've hit a certain age or they use a typewriter, or Phyllis Diller would never have been famous likely in today's world, starting her career near 40.
Right.
You know, Rodney Dangerfield, Vera Wang, the designer, started her career very late in life. I mean, what are we doing when we don't value the experience and the uniqueness of people as they grow? And we want people who look good. You know, I always say style over substance. It doesn't matter what you have to offer as long as you look really good offering it. I mean, what are we doing? Why would we cut ourselves off from each other?
Right.
That's what I don't get.
Yeah.
As people and with ideas. So that's what we do too often. I mean, I don't know how to tell somebody to brand their company. I don't know how to tell them their marketing bottom line. Like, that's not what I do.
Right, right.
I have no idea how to help tell somebody how to do that in a corporation. That's their business.
Right.
But I can tell them, you know, look at the wacko over there. Why not? And it could be the most normal looking person with the most innovative ideas.
Right, right. There's a lot of homogeny going on. Well, Maureen, this has been great. I think your message is absolutely timely. How can people connect to you? What's going on with you? I know you've got your own shows and your own work. Tell us about it.
I thank you. I just gapped. Did I talk your ear off? I probably, but it was fun. You're
this is perfect.
You're such a lovely interviewer and you let people be themselves. Follow me at Maureen Langan, LANGAN.com. Hire me to do corporate talks. I will tailor my TED talk for your corporation. I will work with you to find the right balance, the right tone. You don't have to be scared. And also I have a podcast, Hanging with Langan, and you can find that at MaureenLangan.com. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram, and let's just, it's all Maureen Langan, and let's connect, you know, just connect. Let's have fun. Email me, you know, send messages, you know, just connect.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you so much for your energy and for your message and for your inspiration.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And I wish you much continued success and happiness and health during these crazy and insane times and beyond.
You too.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.